In Great Britain, the top tax rate was 83% on income. If you made an investment and you had any returns, it was going to be 98%. Well, as Keith Richards points out in his autobiography, says that was the equivalent of being told to leave the country. Well, guess what? The Rolling Stones left the country.
Hi, I'm Nick Gillespie with Reason TV, and today we're talking with John Tamney. He is a writer at Forbes and Real Clear Markets, and he's the author of the great new book, Popular Economics, What the Rolling Stones, Downton Abbey, and LeBron James Can Teach You About Economics. John, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
All right, let's start with LeBron James and work backwards. Popular Economics, the name of the book, you use a dizzying array of kind of anecdotes and sources for this, everything from 19th century economic text by John Stuart Mill to things like Downton Abbey, Gilligan's Island, I think, makes an appearance, The Godfather, you name it. What does LeBron James teach us about economics?
Well, LeBron James is a reminder that an economy is not a blob, it's just a collection of individuals. And so how can individuals be best off economically? Well, so I use LeBron James as a reason for having totally open borders to trade. So the first thing, what's great about free trade is it means the most talented people in the world are vying to sell you their goods, to serve you. So that's good for the individual. The individual is not hurt by cheap goods coming in from around the world.
So apply that to LeBron.
Well, LeBron, so what does he do? It's possible that he's a great cook. It's possible that he's great at designing clothes that he could wear, but it would be at the expense of him being the best basketball player in the world. And so what is free trade about? It's possible that I could make computers and build the apartment that I live in, but what I think I do best at is write and edit. And so I exchange the fruits of my labor for all the things that others are really good at. LeBron James, if he didn't just focus on basketball, he wouldn't earn nearly as much. That's bad for him, it's bad for the rest of us.
And I guess there's a case there for not just for open borders in goods, but also in travel. He leaves Cleveland, goes to Miami, comes back to Cleveland. So, he's making a circuit.
Absolutely, I can't think of a more pure market signal than where feet go. It's easily the purest market signal on earth. And when we disallow people to move to where they're most needed, we're basically robbing them of what most animates their talents.
So you're saying that North Korea really should tear down the walls and they'll have plenty of people moving
maybe
in. Yeah. Okay. Downton Abbey, explain its role in the book.
Well, Downton Abbey is an example what is the underlying theme throughout the years of the show? It's about how can we preserve this estate, in most instances, from the government, from the Inland Revenue Service. And so one of the things I like about it is they show that the Crawleys aren't bad people. They treat the people who live on the estate very well. But the bigger picture there is you think about all the efforts they have to go just to hold on to their property from the government and the people they ultimately have to hire to protect their property from the government. Imagine what those people could be doing if they weren't protecting wealth from the government, instead were creating wealth. And specifically, just I think of the Getty Oil Estate. It's one of my major examples in the book. The Getty Oil Estate was worth billions in the 1970s. Thank goodness the federal government didn't take all of it, because guess what? We have ESPN today. It was a joke in the 1970s based on a $10 million investment of the Getty Oil Estate. Imagine all the ESPNs we've lost over the years because government helps itself to half of people's wealth.
Talk about the concept, and this runs through the book too, of creative destruction, because it's true that like fortunes are often kind of taken away or eaten up by government and trying to protect against government. It's also true that technological innovation, consumer demands change, and that suddenly you'll have a great company like A&P or Sears Roebuck or something like that. They're dead now, and then you see the rise of Walmart, and Walmart will pass before us. So what are the other forces that destroy and create fortunes?
Well, they're all pretty good ones, because what you're describing is experimentation that leads to replacement. One of the things I talk about in the book is someone's probably familiar with Blockbuster Video at one time, may it rest in peace or whatever, at one time wanted to merge with Movie Gallery. And the Federal Trade Commission, in its infinite wisdom, said, no, they'll be too powerful in the space of DVDs and videos. We can't allow that to happen. No. Well, so while they're looking at these two companies, Netflix comes in from Silicon Valley and takes them both out of business. And so the constant experimentation that occurs in the economy that makes our lives much better. And when you look at Netflix in a broader sense, what is Silicon Valley? Why is it so rich? It's because the vast majority of the businesses there fail. And so with that experimentation, constantly you get perfection. And so the underlying message of the book also is let's leave as much wealth and capital in the private sector as possible so that we can have as much failure as possible. Let's move it forward so we can know what the markets want and also what we didn't know the markets wanted.
Well, you know, talking about the Inland Revenue Department, you know, that brings us to the Rolling Stones, who were tax exiles. Talk about what the Rolling Stones teach us about economics.
Well, it's a great and also sad tax story. I think we forget how good we have it relative to about three or four decades ago. Back then, in Great Britain, the top tax rate was 83% on income. If you made an investment and you had any returns, it was going to be 98%. Well, as Keith Richards points out in his autobiography, says that was the equivalent of being told to leave the country. Well, guess what? The Rolling Stones left the country. They made one of their greatest albums ever, Exile on Main Street in the south of France, and then finished it up in the United States. And the reminder, first of all, is that the rich can avoid top tax rate. They've got the means to get away from them. But what about the sound engineers? What about the caterers? What about the drivers? All the staff that would have gone into making this in England, they can't move the south of France, they can't move the Stones to the US, and so who ultimately pays these cruel taxes on the most productive? It's those who aren't as mobile, the poor and the middle class.
You know, Mick Jagger went to the London School of Economics, and he was there actually, he overlapped at a period where F.A. Hayek, of all people, was teaching, and I often wonder if they ever met each other or whatever, but it's been, you know, 30 to 35 years, really, since the Rolling Stones have written a song that anybody cares about. You know, and I would say, like, Some Girls was their last great album. You might have people saying, no, there's a couple in the early 80s. But is the persistence of the Rolling Stones as essentially the biggest money-making act every time they go on tour, is that a sign of market failure? Or is that a sign of market success, or what's going on with that?
I think it's got to be a sign of market success, that what do people really enjoy? Let's face it, Creative Destruction has competed away profits on music, on the rights to music. What people really enjoy is the live act. And so the Rolling Stones are giving the markets, in fact, what they want, which is they want to see these guys, amazing as that seems, I think in their 70s, they want to see them on stage.
So it's, you know, they don't want them to make new albums, but they do want to see them perform live.
Yeah, they want you to have a big enough body of work, and I think the market is saying, that's sad to say, you can't improve on what you had. We want to see the songs from Some Girls and Exile and the other ones.
All right, with popular economics, what is, how do you want it to change the world?
I think it's tragic that we're the richest country in the world, and my point there is that the U.S. should be exponentially richer. And so the idea with this is every single American, whether they're well-versed in economics or not, intimately understands economics. I think what the profession has done with charts and graphs has been an utter fraud. All Americans intimately know the four basics to economic growth. If you get taxes, regulation, trade, and monetary policy right, you will have abundant growth that will make the present U.S. look poor by comparison. My point is I'm going to teach it to everyone through the Rolling Stones. I'm going to teach it to them through the University of Michigan football team. I'm going to teach it to them through LeBron James, through the Buffalo Chicken Wings. All they know is right there in front of them to bring us back to much better prosperity.
All right. Well, we'll leave it there. It's a great book and a phenomenal reading. Thank you, John Tamney.
Thank you.
Forbes and Real Clear Markets for talking with Reason TV. I'm Nick Gillespie.